Welcome everyone to V Book Club Podcast. We're so excited to be here filming at the Rep Theater in Seaside today. And I have a special guest from Panama City over here with me, Chef Chris Impfinger.
Hey Jordan, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for making the drive over.
It's not too bad. I stayed in Inlet Beach last night. So
oh good.
Yeah. I love 38.
So yeah.
It's fun. It's my getaway.
Great.
In Panama City.
So I want to get right into it. You are a chef, instructor, artist, storyteller. Tell me a little bit about what you've got going on lately.
Yeah. So I'm a chef. That's my main job, I guess, or my main creative outsource. But I also like to write stories about food. And then I love to tell stories through food. Mm-hmm. So I shop very local. I know farmers and fishermen, and I like to do that. And I host dinner parties. And then in going along with that, I have a show on NPR called Doing Dinner with Chef Chris, mm-hmm. where I actually plan a dinner party over the air and then like hopefully do it later on.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to like pre-plan these parties in an hour live on a microphone.
Right.
And then like actually be able to execute it later on, because mm-hmm. just talking about it is fun, but it helps me paint a picture. And then it also puts out a bunch of content, and I get a ton of feedback before I do it. So if it sounds great on paper or over microphone, then it should be good in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the last one that you did?
The last one I did was Italian. So they're all very themed,
uh-huh.
right? It's all storytelling through food, and they're all very curated. It's not like we just go in and just cook a bunch of food. Everything has a story to it. And usually it's like told throughout courses.
Mm-hmm.
So most of these parties are like 5 or 6 courses. Sometimes they get into like 10 and 12 tasting menu style stuff. But the one I'm planning now, I recently did over air, was a one that has kind of got a little bit of like Disney background to it.
Okay.
So it's like all Disney character themed.
Yeah. Speaking my language.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. And like with a high focus on Alice in Wonderland.
Uh-huh.
But
very
they,
fun.
Yeah, they like the book versus the movie. So it's mm-hmm. it's kind of like playing into the idea of fairy tales through Disney, but making it more adult.
Okay.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How collaborative is this when you're, you know, obviously you're planning it with your guest, but do you have in mind like, okay, I want to work with this farmer or this wine pairing? Like, where's your mind go when you're in the middle of this?
Sometimes it's about trying to figure out, like in Alice in Wonderland, for example, like there's a lot of mushrooms and mm-hmm. like red with, you know, the Queen of Hearts. So it's
right.
like, how do you play into that? And then you start jotting down ideas. I do vision boards just like any other creative does. And then it's a lot of notes on my phone or mm-hmm. just like really fast, rapid brainstorming between like my good and evil, kind of,
yeah.
which is kind of fun because it bounces back and forth. It's like, is this a good idea or a bad idea? But sometimes you just roll with it. When it comes to the guest, a lot of times they don't really have a whole lot of input. They're kind of just like, do your thing. We mm-hmm. see what you do, and we want that. You know, we
okay.
want that creative art, and we want the story, and we want you to talk about it. And so whenever we present a course, it's not just like in a typical dinner party or a restaurant setting where it's like, oh, this is roasted grouper with potatoes and mm-hmm. Vermont, you know, mm-hmm. which is very common in our area, but it's like, where did the grouper come from? Why does it make sense here? You know, what are these potatoes? Why would you use, you know, these rose potatoes versus these other ones? So it gets pretty in depth, especially with the things that people are putting in their mouth.
Right.
And sometimes even with the menus, like they're very uniquely designed, or I'll draw the menus, mm-hmm. like hand do the menus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to get into that too. So like, I was like, I know you're an artist as well. So how does that sort of play into it? Like, you know, your artistic side when you have to be sort of technical as a chef as well.
I like to do a lot of what we call, or what I've kind of coined, it's called cooking from the hip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's creating from the hip. And whenever I'm creating a menu or someone throws me an idea and they say, hey, I want to do this. Like, what can you do? It immediately starts where all these things start happening in, from the creative process of I'm writing it all down, like I'm jotting it all down. Sometimes it's in a notebook and there'll be like little designs next to it. And
mm-hmm.
it's giving me ideas on like what this dish should look like and how it makes sense, like what it speaks to and does it go with a story, you know, because serving a dinner like this is a lot of times a story. It's a storytelling event,
right?
Which is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, generally, I actually design the menus last.
Okay.
So some people like do a menu first, and yes, on paper I do. Mm-hmm. But the reality is like the design of the menu comes at the very end. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, even then, sometimes I like to give the guests the menu at the end of it.
Okay.
Not before. So they sometimes they roll in and they don't know what they're eating, and it's all verbal.
Yeah.
Which is fun. And then you get a menu to take home.
Interesting. So yeah. it's like a takeaway. It's like the bow on top of everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you finding like, because I feel like I've seen more and more of this sort of storytelling through food, which I think has always been part of it, but like people are embracing it a lot more.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. I mean, food has become expensive, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of things have become very expensive, mm-hmm. but food in particular is something that we only have once.
Right.
Right. And it goes away. So being able to have like value added to a guest and being able to offer that to guests helps sell the experience. Mm-hmm. You know, that for me to sell that experience doesn't cost them any more money. It's what I love to do. It's my art. The food costs money, but mm-hmm. me to make up and tell a story through the food and source it is no different than what I already do.
Right.
So it's just this really cool value added system that I love and I'm hyper passionate about that I don't really even have to sell it. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just like, we want that. We love that. And you do it. So go.
How did you know that's what you wanted to do?
When people started calling me, I always knew I wanted to cook. I always knew I wanted to serve people. Mm-hmm. Food is part of my passion, but it's only 20% of it. I know that I love serving people and I like taking care of people and I like telling stories. Mm-hmm. And I love to talk. So it's a perfect like captive audience for me for 3 hours. I knew whenever I was young, like 15 years old, that this is what I was going to do.
Okay.
I didn't know it was going to be like this, where it's like, oh, wow, you do cool dinner parties and you open restaurants for people. And but I always knew I wanted to do something with food and people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you went from, okay, I know I like doing this, to I'm going to make that my career.
Whenever I went to culinary school in West Palm Beach, I got to work on Palm Beach Island, where everything is elevated.
Uh-huh.
Every experience on Palm Beach Island is elevated, right? And then I was like, well, this is amazing. But I don't really see why it costs any more than what we're doing in Northwest Florida. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, maybe I can bring that up there. And, you know, I went and worked at some really cool restaurants and went to some really cool cities. And Panama City, or North Florida in particular, from like Cape San Blas to, you know, Sandestin, has always been my home. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of always been like my area of where I work. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to do this here. And it just so happened that we had like a boom on 30A, a boom in Port St. Joe, you know, Panama City downtown's growing. So now all these artists are coming to the area. So it makes sense that I'm one of the few chefs who do that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's tons of great chefs in our area, but sometimes they don't have the outlet. And I'm like, man, we got to get these people an outlet.
Right. So
it's nice to be able to help that, like with being a professor at a state college. Mm-hmm. Helps me do that. It helps me grow the art community from my side, like outside of four walls.
Yeah. So you're an instructor at Gulf Coast State.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Like, how'd you go from helping open restaurants and working in restaurants to, oh, I want to teach?
I want my area to be better.
Yeah.
And I kind of saw that a lot of people who want to open restaurants don't come from them. Mm-hmm. You know, we have some really amazing hospitality groups in our area now, and that's awesome. But the reality is those awesome hospitality groups need people to work for them or work with them.
Right.
So I was like, if my main goal, which it's always going to be, isn't in hospitality, it's never me first, right? It's always you first. It's always them first. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, within the college and the dean of technology and hospitality is a very close friend of mine. And she was like, hey, why don't you just come teach? It's like 3 days a week. And I'm like, okay, what can I teach? And she's like, whatever you want within culinary and hospitality. Uh-huh. Talk about whatever you want to do, Chris. You know, follow the state regs, but it's kind of your show. So, and I feel like we have the resources here, and especially in North Florida, we have the guest here. You know, mm-hmm. we're growing so incredibly quick, but our workforce and our storytellers and the people that are in our businesses have to grow too, or they're going to go away. And that's where the college came in. It's like a 30,000 foot view of an area that's in this kind of bubble that's very unique. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do, because now I have students and I can give them placement, you know, mm-hmm. because I know a lot of the people that are in hospitality and restaurants in our area. So I'm like, I know that this student's really good at this, and I know that that person is looking for that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the Malcolm Gladwell connector mentality, uh-huh. you know? And I love that part. Like, I love connecting people. Like, you need this, and I know somebody who does it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. And then you have your students kind of doing what you're doing and planning dinner parties and planning menus.
Yeah.
How does that work? And like, what? Because they even do like an entire restaurant pop up at the college.
Yeah, we just did so I teach the first class students take, which is like beginning culinary principles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's how to use a knife and how to cut a carrot. It's very simple work. It's how to cook an egg. But I also teach the last class, which is externship.
Okay.
And externship used to be kind of, it had this mindset of, we're just going to teach them how to do a resume and then like help them find a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, why? Like, what? Like, who really in hospitality these days, unless you're like in upper management or middle management, even messes with a resume? You know, if you're hiring a line cook or a server or a bartender, you don't really look at that. Not unless it's like super high end,
right?
2-3 Michelin level stuff, mm-hmm. right? So I'm like, well, no one really does that anymore. It's kind of outdated. So I'm like, but what people are doing, what gets these young chefs into mentality to go out into the field and know how to do things and to be able to work on the fly and is to actually do it. So we planned this pop-up, and I was just a coach, right? I didn't do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the students did the work, and it was called Heritage. They got to name it. They got to pick the menu, and their idea behind it was I think there was 14 students in that class. Each one of them had a course, and it was based on where they're from and their heritage.
Uh-huh.
So we just called it Heritage, and I helped them plan it through the ordering, taught them how to order food, taught them how to pair wines, taught them how to do it. And we held it at Gulf Coast State College mm-hmm. on the third floor. We have this beautiful open kitchen that had never been used. And it has like, it overlooks the bay and the port of Panama City.
Okay.
So
yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, at sunset. And it was cool. It was 14 courses, 14 mm-hmm. students, and half of them cooked and half of them waited tables. And we had like wine pairings, and it was amazing because we sold the tables for $500 each, and we sold out in like 30 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was really, really cool for them to be able to do that and then execute it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously, like you said, so much support in the area for that level of dining and support for these young chefs and these creatives. So that's like really cool to see.
It was fun, and it was very gratifying. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very rewarding as someone who is, I guess it's probably like a head coach winning a Super Bowl or something, you know, or a championship of some sort. It's like you stand back and you watch them do it and you're like, well, this is really good. Like, this is kind of cool. You know, it makes your job really easy. I liked it.
So that's only one of the things you do at Gulf Coast State, where you also film your NPR show, which is called Doing Dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me a little bit about how you got into that.
So I was doing dinner parties, and the director of the radio station, which is 90.7 WKGC mm-hmm. NPR, he's a younger guy. He's from Tampa. He's new. It was his first year, and he kind of wanted to shake things up. So I met him at the beginning of every fall semester. There's kind of like this symposium of professors, and we all get together and we all kind of talk about the year. And I met him there, and he was like, oh, I'm taking over the radio station. And he's like, what do you do? And I told him, and he's like, would you ever talk about dinner parties on the radio? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'd love to do that. That's what I love to do. And he's like, well, do you want to do a show? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I was like, what's it about? And he's like, whatever you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you name it, you design it, it's your thing. And I was like, well, cool. And then it kind of just took off, and I love it. So it's every Thursday live, 12 to 1. And then it's a podcast 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
So
wherever
people want to hear it.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I got to attend one of your dinner party tastings at St. Andrew's Bodega.
Yes.
in Panama City, St. Andrews area, and it was all sort of Coca-Cola themed, which was for Redfish Film Festival 2025. You planned that whole menu based on Coca-Cola being the presenting sponsor for the year. So tell us about how you did that.
So I helped with Redfish year one a little bit. You know, I kind of helped a little bit with the food. But year two, Brittany Tucker came to me, who is probably one of the most brilliant women I've ever met in my life. And she's become a really good friend of mine. She said, "Hey, what can you do with Coca-Cola?" And I'm like, "What are you asking?" And she's like, "Can you plan an entire party around Coca-Cola?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I can." What's the limitations? And she's like, "What I love about Brittany is there's no limitations. Like, wherever your creativity can take you, right?"
I'm sensing a theme of whatever you want to do, Chris. Yeah, like, just do it.
Yeah, whatever you want to do. I'm like, okay. So I went and really thought about, how do you take this, like, national brand or global brand? Like, it's one of the most recognizable words on the planet, Coke, right? And turn it into something that's, like, kind of personal and, like, new and fun. Because people cook with Coca-Cola all the time, but do they make, you know, do they take all the Coke catalog of products, which is like, well, they have a strawberry drink called Strawberry Fanta.
Right.
And it's like, what do you do with Strawberry Fanta? It's like, well, I know that strawberry is really good in pies. So it's like, oh, Strawberry Fanta pie with a little Redfish on top, you know, because like that's their theme. But, and so we did like strawberry pie with made with Fanta. We did like these Coca-Cola braised like sliders with really amazing, and that's what I'll do. I'll take like a product that should had really no business being paired with Coca-Cola and like Karabuda pork, which is from Japan and it's amazing. And then like combined it with Coca-Cola and made it good because Coca-Cola is like the premium soda on the planet, right? Like,
sure.
There's nobody who makes better soda than Coke. Like they've been doing it forever. So you combine it with these cool new flavors and it was amazing. The popcorn shrimp, you know, made with like a...
I think that was my favorite.
Yeah, the popcorn shrimp was cool because Redfish Film Fest is a film festival. I think it's kind of moving into like an art festival now, but...
It's a lot of things.
It's a lot of things, and I was like, well, popcorn's great at the movies and popcorn shrimp is a thing in our area. And one of the dishes that our area really, really loves is like the bang bang shrimp, you know, with the hot spicy sauce, tossed in fried shrimp. And I was like, well, what if we make a bang bang Coca-Cola sauce? And we did and it was delicious.
It was.
Yeah, it was really good. And it even surprised me. I'm like, well, okay, some things work and this one worked really well. Yeah.
Do you ever end up making these things at home just like on the fly?
Never cook at home for myself.
No.
No. Never cook at home for myself. My fridge has water in it.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Like water and it's kind of like, you know, the cobbler's kids don't have shoes sort of thing.
Yeah. So that's I never cook in my house. So very rarely cook in my house. Yeah.
Well, tell us also about like so you had a whole setup at Redfish. It wasn't just the food. I mean, you had your table, you had like decorations and did the VIP party. It's the whole experience and like your team was there. And
we did another one that they came to me with was Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really, really cool. But for that, we did the opening night, which was all Coca-Cola themed. So we did the Coca-Cola dinner party.
Right.
And then we served it to the public.
Yeah.
But the public got it passed. So we had like this cotton candy station where we roasted these cherries off and made them cherry Coke flavored cherries. Because you can like take them and put them in a soda siphon with Coca-Cola. So they were carbonated like Coca-Cola. So they were cherry Coke cherries. And then we spun it around cherry flavored cotton candy.
Yep.
Yeah, which was pretty fun. And like people were walking around kind of in this like, it was kind of like Coca-Cola fairish, and it was a lot of fun. It was really, really cool, and I think people loved it. But the Mask of the Red Death, different animal. That was we did a whole pig. So they came to me and said, "All of this food has to be themed like death."
And it was Edgar Allan Poe, Edgar like Allan masquerade party theme.
And I'm like, okay, well, I think serving a whole dead animal would be kind of cool. So I called this local farmer. His name is Josh, and he has this beautiful farm in Liberty County. And it's called Forgotten Coast Farms. And to me, he grows and raises the best chicken and pigs anywhere near us. It's truly amazing stuff what him and his family do. And I was like, Josh, can I get an entire animal from you? And he was like, yeah. So like 6 a.m. before this party, which started at 7 o'clock at night, he was delivering this giant pig to me.
Yeah.
And we built this whole hog pit in the style of like Western or Eastern Carolina behind a restaurant. And then we roasted this whole pig in there. And it was really amazing. If it was like stuffed with pork and it had the apples and the roses and like all of these red things around it. And we had like a red spotlight shining down on it. So it was really cool.
It was very macabre, but also like beautiful in its own way.
It was very beautiful in its own way, but I guess it kind of like Edgar Allan Poe writes beautiful or wrote beautiful poetry, right? And beautiful stories. But they also were very dark.
Right.
And that was the whole point of like trying to match your food to his writing, which what an honor that is. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that pig was quite amazing.
So I want to do like a mini like episode of doing dinner.
Okay. We can do that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So normally how doing dinner starts is I started off with like telling a story of what we're planning. So any dinner party, I always want to have some content built in for the guest, right? Or the clients, whatever they are. One recently would be, because we did the Coca-Cola show over there too. So I would start off like telling the story of, we could use V.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, let's
I would interview you before the party and I'd say like, you know, tell me about V. What is it? Why does it exist? You know, who's the founder? Why is it important? What is its goal? And I would start there. And then, so my process of creating would be, I'm going to learn as much about V Magazine as I can before the show and then plan it through the process. And, you know, whether it's the founder got inspiration for this part of the magazine from this, like I would try to connect a food dish to that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we could do it through you. Like, so tell me what is the magazine to you?
To me, it has been this incredible vehicle for creativity, but also, you know, like you, I love the service aspect of telling other people's stories and helping them like get their story out there and the incredible things that they're doing. Because I don't like talking or writing about myself. So I'm always like, let me help you, you know, let me help this artist get their work in front of more people or tell their story.
Okay. So it's an outlet for creatives to speak about what they love.
Yep.
So I would start there and I would say, what was your favorite guest? And then I would probably like dive into being like, okay, I would reach out to them and be like, hey, what's your favorite food?
Okay.
And then I would tell you that story.
Yeah.
Like it might be course one and it could be, you know, whatever that guest was. Oh, do you remember you did a guest one time? And you would go into this dinner not knowing that.
Okay.
And, you know, I'd be like, who were your favorite guests? What was your favorite article? What was, and I would kind of pinpoint and pick and pull from there to make it about you and what what this publication means to you and through your career with it.
Okay.
That's what I would do with that one.
Oh, yeah. I love that. And like we get to travel a lot of places. Yeah. So it could be pulling from some of those trips that we've taken or, you know, we've covered fashion weeks in different cities around the world and things like that. So it's a lot. I feel like a lot we could do.
Yeah, there's a lot. We can, I can say, what was your favorite part of New York Fashion Week, if that's where you went, you know, and like, who was your favorite show? What was your favorite designer? And then I can like figure out what food makes sense with them to make sense with you. And it's, I mean, it's like telling your story through my eyes, through a plate of food.
And then how do they curate the guests? Do you invite certain people or?
Normally they curate the guest. Now I do the pop-ups. We're going to have our first one at the end of this month, at the end of July. And that one's going to be called Gulf and Garden. So it's all like, I'm telling the story of local fishermen that still exist. And then these farms that are in our area. And kind of combining the two and telling the story of those farmers and fishermen. And it's going to be at Revival House in
Daniel
City. Yeah. Which is a cool, cool place.
Yeah.
A really cool, like New Orleans style shop. And we're just going to do a great big table through the whole shop and just invite like 30 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that ticketed?
Yeah, it's going to be ticketed.
Okay.
We haven't released tickets yet. It's like we'll sell out in, you know, a couple hours probably, but we'll probably release them 2 weeks before, which will be next week.
Is that something you're going to continue to do throughout the year?
Yeah. Yeah. I already have number two planned as well. And I'm trying to plan number three for September. I'm going to do one a month.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah. They're all storytelling events. They're all telling a story of something.
Where can people find these tickets?
I'm about to release the website. It's going to be golfandgarden.com.
Okay.
And we'll have them there and it'll be like Eventbrite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, so tell me also a little bit about just how you feel about the restaurant industry and, like you said, these fishermen and these farmers in the area. I want to say the fishermen in particular because that is such a difficult and sort of, I don't want to say controversial career right now, but like I know that they're struggling. And yeah, so how can we help like support them?
You know, one of our local fishermen in our area and who happens to be a very important commercial fisherman to the entire East Coast, his name is Greg Abrams. And he owns a place in Panama City called Tarpon Dock Seafood and Greg Abrams Seafood.
Yep.
He also owns Hunt's Oyster Bar. anyway, every year he takes me to Washington, D.C. with him. And he has me cook for a bunch of people at NOAA. You know, NOAA pretty much sets all the laws for fishermen. Any commercial U.S. fisheries, NOAA pretty much says yay or nay to that. They also set recreational laws. NOAA pretty much controls all the fish in the sea, so to speak. but yeah, and especially with like shrimp. Shrimp is a big one right now. I don't know if people know about some of the things that are happening with shrimp, especially in the state of Florida. Most of our shrimpers have gone away, which is kind of sad. We have a couple left in Bay County. I think there's probably still a few left in Destin area, but it's just not profitable to them anymore to go catch shrimp because of what's happening in, you know, Indonesia and Southeast Asia. They're farm raising a bunch of shrimp and it's half the price. So it's important to sell local and to buy local from that aspect, even if it is twice as much, right? Because if it's twice as much, generally it's twice as good. At least that's what I like to say. You know, if the shoes cost twice as much, they last twice as long.
Right.
And the shrimp is the big one in the state right now. Everyone's talking about shrimp because the state of Florida decided they wanted to do research on shrimp and they went to restaurants and they found out like it was something crazy, like 96 out of 100 restaurants sell shrimp from Asia.
Okay.
So it's like, oh my goodness, you know, and then they're like, okay, this is a problem. We got to figure this out. So that's the big one right now. Fishermen, seafood just costs a lot of money to begin with. But there's no replacement for fresh grouper, like, you know, which is dynamic for our area, or the American red snapper. There's just no replacement for it. It's the best of the best. And that's why people all over the country buy it. And we pull a bunch of snapper out of the Gulf of Mexico.
Right. So, but it's such a grueling process to go out there and get it.
It is. Yeah, it is. And like, it's hard to explain, but like the federal government will shut down these areas of water and they'll say, you can't fish here. So then you got to fish around it, or you got to fish further away, or they got to travel farther, or there's a lot that goes into it. And I only know because I care about these people that do this job because it's important to our area, right? It's important that we're able to sell local seafood in Northwest Florida. It just is. Like, that's why people come here. They come here for two reasons, the beach and seafood.
Right.
So I think it's important that we protect those people as a group of people that live here. It's like, hey, they're doing a job that we have to have, you know. People come here to eat seafood and we should have the best of the best. There's no reason we shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, so how often are you going out to the farmer's market or the fish market? Or I know like that's important to you. And I see your Snapchats and you're at the farmer's market and you're supporting everyone.
I shop at the farmer's markets generally every Saturday. Even if I don't buy anything, I still go. Because I want them to see me there and I want them to know that they have support, especially from a commercial side. And somebody who's like, hey, I appreciate what you guys are doing because it's a labor of love. You know, someone who is raising chickens and then bringing them to market on a local level is competing with a lot of roadblocks and a lot of walls. So for them to know that I support them and I buy their products, I do it every Saturday. I usually go to the fish market twice a week. Even if I don't buy anything, I just go and look, just to see what's fresh. I will tell you, out here on 30A, the seaside market's great, and so is Rosemary Beach. Mm-hmm. Rosemary Beach's farmer's market's the best one near us.
Okay.
Tallahassee.
Yeah, we do love that one.
Yeah, that one's awesome. Tallahassee has a really amazing one called the Red Hills Market.
Okay.
That the cool part about that one is you can't sell anything there unless you grow it or make it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So people there are hyper prideful of what they
right.
do. And sometimes I will drive over there just to like go shop at their market and bring mm-hmm. stuff back.
Nice.
Yeah, because it's easy. It's still North Florida. You know, it's like if I can drive to your farm within 2 hours, I consider it local.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is like you're not growing anything close to the beach, but you are growing things in the counties north of us or mm-hmm. like North Walton or Washington or Liberty or, you know, Gadsden or any of those counties that are north of us that don't sit on the coast. They deserve praise too. And they're like they're sending us food and it's usually pretty good. So watermelons and okra and peaches and right now at least that's what peppers like.
Yeah, what's in season right now? Like what should we be eating?
You should be eating
right
a lot of watermelon right
okay,
now.
Okay, yeah. You know? it's summer.
Yeah, watermelon, okra, hot peppers, even sweet bell peppers. Let's see here, peaches, any of the stone fruit, plums, mm-hmm. things of that nature in season. One of my favorite products that a lot of people grow here is called Malabar spinach.
Okay.
A lot of people grow it here because it grows really well in humid environments. And then, you know, my favorite season is fall though, whenever like it's like collard greens and it starts cooling down and you can have Brussels sprouts and like mm-hmm. a bunch of other stuff too. Summer's hard in North Florida because it gets so hot and a lot of things die. Tomatoes are here, but they're about to be done. Usually mm-hmm. by August, they're done. They just burn up.
What's your go-to fall dish?
Oh, I don't know. I really, really like cooking locally. So it's like whatever I just find at the market that's fresh, local, and smells good, tastes mm-hmm. good, you know? Usually if you shop at farmers markets, they let you taste it before you buy it.
Right.
You know, it's not like you can go to a local supermarket uh-huh. and be like, I'm going to eat this peach before I pay for it. You'll go to jail. That's stealing. But at a farmer's market, they'll be like, here, eat one. You know, they're very prideful in what they do too. So fall dish, usually like if it's cold, like braised short rib, some local grits. Like there are grit mills near us within mm-hmm. a couple hundred miles that make amazing grits. Like grits with like braised short rib, usually some type of like roasted vegetable that's hyper local and seasonal, maybe some spinach. We get a lot of greens in the fall, which mm-hmm. is good.
Yeah, it's getting close to lunchtime, so I'm like, yeah, let's do that. Well, thank you so much for coming out today and like hanging out. I also want to ask you, because this is technically the V Book Club podcast, so mm-hmm. what's your favorite book?
My favorite
why?
Book is Malcolm Gladwell, Tipping Point.
Okay.
And he recently did another one mm-hmm. That I bought for a friend. They're like, she asked me a question of like, how do I figure you out? And I'm like, read Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point.
Okay.
I like him. He writes a lot about people and I love people. Mm-hmm. So that's my favorite book, I'd say. But my favorite non-book or self-help book or whatever you would call it is Around the World in 80 Days.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I actually have a party planned for, and I'm trying to convince Redfish to let me do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that sounds great. I mm-hmm. think we should definitely get them on board with that.
Yeah. Jules Verne's amazing. I love Jules Verne's work. Uh-huh. Yeah. What a creative.
Well, is there anything else you want to share? Any tips for upcoming chefs or people that are planning a dinner party?
Yeah. Call me. No. Don't do it if you don't love it. That's what I like mm-hmm. to tell people. If you don't love this, don't do it.
Yeah.
So that's usually where good things start with love, you know, and I love to love. Mm-hmm. So
agreed. Well, I think that's a good advice for anyone in any field. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah.
And we hope to attend a dinner party soon or plan a dinner party soon.
Absolutely.
And see you at Redfish Film Festival year 3.
Year 3.
So yeah, let's get to it. Thank you so much, Chef Chris.
Yeah.
And thanks everyone for tuning in. We will see you next time on V Book Club.